Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Michael Anthony of Bridgeport, Massachusetts, served 12 months in Iraq as an Army medic. He was 21 when he returned to the States, happy to be home. But within a couple of weeks, he was in trouble. He was high on Vicodin, drunk, and picking a fight with a very large Hell's Angel. Anthony says he never felt more alive than when he was working at a combat support hospital. But back home, he felt hollow, without purpose, filled with rage, addicted to painkillers, and suicidal. Then, on a drunken whim, Anthony signed up for a 3-day seminar on how to attract women, which led to a journey of self-discovery and ultimately salvation. Michael Anthony writes about this with a mix of candor and humor in his new memoir, Civilianized, and he joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So this is your second memoir. The first was Mass Casualties. It looked at your deployment in Iraq. Tell me a little bit about that. It was 12 months. What was it like?
Yeah, so my deployment to Iraq was, I mean, it was interesting. You know, it's not your typical, you know, wartime experience that you might, you know, vision from a movie or a TV show. It was a combat support hospital, and we were a reserve unit from Massachusetts. So we weren't those active duty people. So we were a lot more lax and, I guess, liberal in our military bearing, and it definitely showed through in some of the experiences that we had overseas.
Such as?
I guess I would just say some of that lack of military bearing. You know, there is, you know, behind-the-scenes stories, you know, what I love to write about is the human aspect of war, mm-hmm. You know, those real people at war, not just those one-dimensional, idealized, romanticized versions. So, I mean, an example would be, you know, you're in war and there's a mortar attack and the bombs are falling and you go to your hospital and you save a bunch of lives, right? But then afterwards, over at the barracks, there's like an orgy that happens or like a gangbang that happens. And that, there's just that real human aspect of war that happens. You know, these are people at war and there's that, you know, that dark aspect, I guess,
dark
that happens behind the scenes.
That people get involved with. So you return home, you're 21 years old. What was your, I have to assume you were happy about the idea of coming home. What was your plan?
Yeah, I mean, coming back from war, while you're overseas at war, you build up being back home. You build up everything that you're going to do when you get back home, everyone you're going to see, and you just get this idealized version. But then you come back home, and it just hits you. You know, mm-hmm. When you're thinking of everything back home and the people back home, you think everyone's just perfect. Even the people you hated are, you know, you romanticize them. And, oh, they weren't that bad after all. But then you come back home, and you see, you know, sometimes you see a society that, you know, they don't even realize we were still at war overseas, or they don't care.
Yeah.
And you're coming back home to that. Or, you know, we came back home to a recession. So you're coming back home and there's no jobs available and there's partisan politics. People care more about the Kardashians than, you know, Kandahar.
And I guess there has to be an issue of sort of personal purpose as well. I mean, right, when you're in a war zone, when you're saving lives, when literally the actions you're taking every day are life and death, I mean, they can really matter. There must be a part of you that sort of misses that sense of dramatic purpose.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. You know, a lot of veterans, when they come back home, you know, there's very high suicide rates for veterans right now. They estimate between 20 and 22 veterans kill themselves every day in the United States. And I think a lot of it does have to do with they come back home and they miss that sense of purpose, that sense of adrenaline. Overseas, when you're in war, you know, war demands 100% of a person's everything, you know, their spirit, their soul. You need to give 100%. And you can go, you realize how tough a human spirit is. You can go days with, you know, near a thing to eat, you know, days, weeks without, you know, just 1 or 2 hours of sleep a night. And you push yourself to this maximum for this purpose, to this mission. And you come back home and civilian life just doesn't, you know, call that from you. You know, right. It doesn't call you to be 100% of the time.
Right.
It doesn't call to be 100% of you. You could just be some poor slop working 40 hours a week, giving, you know, 30% of yourself, and you're making a nice little income for yourself, a nice little middle-class life. You know, civilian life just doesn't call you to be that 100% person, that, you know, realized person.
Right. So in your case, very soon after you get back, as you write, you're addicted to painkillers, you're drinking, you're filled with anger, you say you feel hollow. And at a certain point, there's this scene where you're picking a fight with a Hell's Angel who is about 3 times your size. First of all, explain that. That seems like a situation that anyone interested in self-preservation wouldn't want to get into.
Yeah, I guess you just come back from this, you know, war and you're just in that head zone of, you know, this guy doesn't know who I am. You know, he doesn't know what I've been through. And there was just this Hell's Angel walking around like he owns the world. And I'm just this young back from the war walking around like I own the world. And then we just kind of collided. These two guys thinking they own the world kind of just collide. And that's what happened there.
Right. And what did it tell you? I mean, as you sort of thought about it afterwards, what did it make you think?
Well, I mean, it didn't tell me anything right away. I don't think any thoughts or realization probably didn't come until months and months and months later. But at the time, I was just kind of looking forward to a fight, I guess.
Yeah, right. Now, things got pretty bleak for you. At one point, you call the Veterans Administration suicide hotline a couple of times, and you note in the book that the hotline receives an average of 50,000 calls a year since it opened in 2007. Were they able to help you in any way?
I don't think at that time they were able to help me. I think a lot of these organizations, and you know, they have good intentions, but I mean, there's pretty much scripts that they have to follow, and sometimes, I mean, I guess there's that one aspect of just talking about things helps you. But another aspect, there is that kind of script that they have to follow. And I don't know, I don't think it really gets to the heart of the issue. I think a lot of veterans, you know, it helps when they talk to other veterans, somebody who kind of gets it right off the bat. When you're talking to somebody and they're there to help, but they haven't had those experiences, they're just there to kind of talk about things. And one of the things that I have seen helped a lot of veterans is when it's those same conversations, but instead of with, you know, this trained suicide operator, it's just that same conversation with the veteran. And it goes a lot farther when they can, you know, already have that connection.
All right. So tell us what happened. You at a certain point, you're feeling pretty desperate. You give yourself a 3-month deadline, and this is a pretty serious deadline, right? You're thinking, if I can't sort of get things sorted out, I'm going to do what in 3 months?
Yeah, so I guess I just gave myself this arbitrary deadline. You know, if I don't feel better in 3 months, I'm just gonna kill myself. You know, I'm just gonna end it. And I came back from the Iraq War with, you know, over $50,000 in the bank because I didn't spend any money. I did employment. You know, war actually pays pretty well even if you're a lowly, you know, soldier. So I came back with all this money, and I just had this idea, like, I'm just gonna spend it and see if after these couple of months, you know, there's anything, you know, that happens inside that makes me want to, you know, keep going on. So that's where I started taking these dating courses at, you know, a couple $1,000, you learn how to talk to girls. And I was just a shy, nerdy guy, you know, thinking, you know, of course this 21-year-old's going to think, oh, this is what's going to save me, you know, learning how to talk to girls and get laid.
Okay, so say a little bit more about these classes. How are they set up? They sound sort of super awkward, I got to say.
No, they are super awkward. I mean, so they're called pickup artist classes. Okay. So they're actually pretty big out in the world. They're called pickup artist classes. And, you know, they promise if you come to these classes, it's a week-long course, costs a couple $1,000. They'll teach you how to talk to girls. And some of them really, you know, there's different methodologies they teach you. There's like the direct method they teach you where you just kind of walk up like you're the cock of the walk and just, you know, say directly what you're looking for. And there's like the indirect method where it's like you say these kind of lines and you slowly build up attraction, you build up a connection, and then you do all these little pseudo-psychological tricks, and that'll get you.
So the good news in reading this book is you managed to find your way out of this depression. How did these courses help you do that?
I don't know if the courses helped me. I mean, they helped me get laid. I don't know if they helped me okay. internally.
Remember,
for anything.
Family program.
Right.
Okay, there we
yeah.
go.
Things, you know, these things lead to families. So, yeah. But, you know, they helped me with that aspect. They didn't help me with anything internally. I think the biggest thing that helped me towards the end was when I actually started writing, and writing gave me that sense of purpose and mission, you know, something greater than myself, to actually write a true war story, something that would help veterans. And, you know, what we talked about just a couple of minutes ago, you lose that sense of purpose and mission when you come back from the war. And when I found the aspect of writing, you know, something to actually work towards and have a mission and purpose, something that was greater than myself, that helped dig me out of this hole pretty much, where I just said, okay, this is something to focus on rather than all these bad thoughts and memories and just, you know, looking to chase, you know, just girls, you know, doing something greater than myself gave me that sense of purpose.
You know, this question of how to help veterans, it's such a sort of universal subject. I spent a lot of time over the last year and a half covering a presidential campaign. I never went to a presidential campaign event where veterans weren't honored, where veterans weren't saluted, where all of whoever the candidate was said, we're going to do more to help the veterans. But in a way, the words rang hollow to me because it almost sounded like a habit. I mean, I guess this is sort of leading to the question, what should be done? I mean, as a veteran, what would you really like to see happen in a way that helps veterans?
Well, one of my favorite veteran charities is an organization called Mission Continues, and they're actually a charity that They help veterans by asking veterans to give back. So a lot of these charities out there, they kind of put those kid gloves on for veterans, like, oh, come to us and we'll take you on a kayaking trip, or come to us and we'll give you this therapy. This mission continues. They actually go out there and say, no, listen, we're not going to give you anything. We want you veterans to come here and volunteer your time to make your community better. And it's called Mission Continues because it goes to give those veterans, like, listen, you gave everything you had over to war, but you're not done. All right, we have more for you to do. And that actually has helped a lot of veterans to get out there and just give back to their community. And that has actually turned a lot of veterans around to go get back in that zone of being a giver instead of coming home and being a taker or not having that sense of purpose or mission. So Mission Continues is definitely one of my favorite veteran charities. Like I said, it just asks veterans to give more of themselves. And that somehow just calls forth those veterans to, just like, you know, we talked about earlier, get themselves together and have that purpose and sense of mission again.
Well, Michael Anthony of Bridgeport, Mass., he's the author of Civilianized, A Young Veteran's Memoir. Michael Anthony, a real pleasure having you. Thanks for coming in and talking about your experience.
Yeah, thanks for having me.